Hello and welcome to the America Magazine podcast for the week of December 24th. This is our Christmas podcast. It seemed like a good opportunity to bring in our new editor-in-chief, Matt Malone. Welcome, Father Matt.
Thank you very much.
Now, Father Matt, I thought we could first just introduce you to people who may not know you. You were here as an associate editor at America, but even before that, you've had some background in journalism and you worked at a think tank. Maybe you can introduce that to our listeners.
Yeah, in one way or another, I've been associated with America for 10 years since I entered the Society of Jesus. I first came here as a novice, and I served as an associate editor under Tom Reese. Then I came here as a regent, which is that period between philosophy studies and theology studies, a period of full-time work that Jesuits in formation go through. And I was here 2 years, from 2007 to 2009, working for Father Christensen. Covering foreign policy and domestic politics. And that was a very exciting time because it was the 2008 election. Politics is a real interest of mine. Before I entered the society at 30, I worked in politics. The bulk of that time was spent at, as you indicate, at a think tank called Mass, Inc., based in Boston, the Massachusetts Institute for a New Commonwealth. We were focused on, you know, providing policy analysis and research that would help to develop a public policy agenda for Massachusetts and New England that would facilitate access to the middle class. And part of that effort was, as I said, research and analysis. Another part of it was journalism. And so I helped to start there a magazine called Commonwealth, which basically attempted through in-depth reporting and journalism to put a human face on the statistics and the policy analysis. And, you know, I'm proud to say that that's now in its 16th year, which is unusual for a new magazine. It's one of the ones that survived.
Now, I wonder if there's some lessons for America from your time there at Mass, Inc. and at Commonwealth, kind of this blend of journalism, which is obviously what we're involved in, but also finding ways to shape the conversation on different issues. Do you think America can play that role as well?
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, I think that that's the role that America has traditionally played. What it really comes down to in the end is America is a smart Catholic take on faith and culture. And what America has done through a century of work is change the conversation about faith and culture, most of the time for the better. But by either pointing to issues that are of concern to a Catholic conscience that are not being treated in the public square and ought to be, or by, you know, calling our attention back to the first principles of Catholic teaching, or by simply modeling a form of discourse that, you know, that is characteristic of Christian charity. And so, yeah, I think that there is a way in which the two are similar. But there is a fundamental way in which they're different, obviously, and the way in which America differs from Commonwealth has to do with, you know, the commitments that America has to our Catholic Christian faith and how that guides our editorial policy.
Well, it's interesting. You know, I don't think people think of America as a think tank, for example, but we do play a role in kind of helping to shape the conversation, serving as a resource for the larger media, for example. That may be something people don't know about, but that's a role we serve.
Yeah, and it's an important part of what we do. And I think, you know this as a journalist, and certainly any journalists who are listening will know this as well. It used to be that you know, a journalist was hired and covered a particular beat, and they usually had to have some serious expertise in that area. They would spend years on that beat and developing their skills, and whether it was languages or statistical analysis or you know, just figuring out your way around Capitol Hill or the walls of a curia or the hallways of a curia. And you know, news organizations simply don't have the resources anymore to invest in that kind of talent. And so you have, you know, journalists out there who are covering multiple beats and moving from one story to the next very, very quickly. And so some of the nuance and some of the sophistication that we saw in a previous generation in their reporting and analysis on the church has been lost, which is not, you know, it's not a conspiracy on the part of journalists. It's just the way that it is. And, you know, the church is a tough thing to cover because, you know, we're not, our self-conception is not of a polis with different factions. It's of a sacrament. And we understand ourselves in theological terms, yet journalists are constantly tempted to write about us in political terms. So one of the things that America can do, which it has done historically and is now even, you know, this work is all the more important now because of the loss of journalists and the loss of, you know, resources in journalism, is to help journalists to report and comment on what is happening in the church, to help them make sense of it, and to give them a sense of how it is that Catholic Christians understand their church, so that they can report and analyze what occurs in church matters with a greater degree of sophistication and nuance and, frankly, just accuracy. So we hope one of that is one of the roles we've played historically is as a resource for the secular media, and we hope to do that. We continue to do that. It's an important part of our mission.
Now, I want to direct our listeners to the Of Many Things column, which I'm sure many will be familiar with. This has traditionally been a venue for the editor-in-chief, also sometimes for the editors of the magazine, to opine on many different topics. But maybe you can talk a little bit about what you're trying to do since you started in October with this column. You've been writing it in every issue now. Maybe you could talk about that.
Sure. Well, as you said, it's traditionally it has been. It's a very old part of the magazine. It's at least 50 or 60 years old, and traditionally, throughout most of that history, it was written each week by the editor in chief. And under the last couple of editors in chief, that's the task of writing that column is something that was shared with the associate editors. And now we've returned to this tradition where the editor-in-chief writes it weekly, not because what the associate editors were writing wasn't good. It was great, and it was terrific prose and really great analysis and some warm, engaging, funny. But what I'm hoping to do in that column by writing it every week is to really narrate our editorial decision-making, to try to give the reader a sense of why it is that we have chosen to write about the things that we're writing about, and to give them a better sense of how it is that the things we're writing about and covering in each issue relate to events in the larger society. So, in other words, to sort of provide context, because I think that that's helpful. One of the reasons why people turn to a magazine in the 21st century is precisely because it's content that is curated, right? So, I mean, a lot of the information as information that we publish in America, you know, could be found online, but, you know, you'd have to search for days to find it, right? And it wouldn't be as well organized and as well critiqued and as well presented. And so people turn to magazines, I think, to help them make sense of the world in which they're living and to bring together the most important information and commentary that touches on, you know, the topics with which the magazine is concerned. So, you know, rather than sort of, you know, leaving it to the reader to discern, how it is that we made the choices that we make, I thought it best to just sort of get them inside our head a little bit, to allow them inside our head a little bit, and to demonstrate that there's a madness in our method.
Well, even you mentioned some of the earlier editors who wrote this column. Some of them would sometimes mention other articles in the magazine, but sometimes they were pretty kind of sui generis, just doing their own thing, commenting on various things that were of interest to them. But perhaps we're at a time now where folks need a little more, you know, to kind of help them, lead them through an issue and show them, okay, this is why you should care about this issue. And I mean, it often occurred to me that people could go to the Of Many Things and read it right away, maybe read the Word column right away, and maybe not get to the rest of the issue for a while. But you're trying to force people to, come on, let's look at some of the other content here.
Yeah, and there's really great stuff here.
Sure.
Yeah. And I try, you know, it's a column, right? It's not an editor's note. So I try to avoid just kind of a straightforward, in this issue we have such and such, yeah. and then we have such and such, and you ought to take a look at such and such. I really try to, you know, while I touch on the contents of the issue and show why I think certain things are relevant, I'm not always doing that directly. And I try to place it in context. So the column is, you know, the framing mechanism in the column for discussing the contents is usually an event or, you know, some bit of history or pop culture or politics that, you know, I think is interesting and affords me an opportunity to, you know, to talk about why it is that we choose what we choose.
Now, it's very interesting. You look through the history of America, and each editor had his own distinct kind of take on the church and the world. And you can see very clearly their DNA in the magazine during their editorial direction. You know, whether it was under Father George Hunt, who was very interested in literary issues and affairs, Father Tom Rees, more interested in the American church, Father Drew, who just left us, more interested in the world church. Now, we're still learning about you and what you're interested in, but I thought one article worth citing and quoting, and maybe you can talk a bit about it, is this Ivan Kaufman piece from the December 10th issue, in which he argues that a truly Catholic approach to politics must reject ideology entirely, and that American democracy will not survive unless we find new post-ideological ways to solve our problems. So maybe you can see how that kind of shapes what your approach to editing America.
Yeah, I mean that's actually a pretty good summation of my approach to the editorial policy of America. As often happens when I read America, that's something I wish I had written myself. Yeah, I think Mr. Kaufman is onto something there, and obviously I do, right? We printed it, but I think, you know, one of the problems that we've had in the American Church since the Council is, you know, we have in a kind of unreflective way imported into the church categories, symbols, and language that belong to secular politics, right, and that are not directly, obviously, theological. And so this influences the way in which we talk to one another as church. And to me, that's somewhat problematic because our political discourse is structured on binary ideas, right? Liberal, conservative, left, right, public, private, and so forth. When those binary ideas are, you know, just kind of thoughtlessly imported into our ecclesial dialogue, it tends to create a situation in which we repeat the same mistakes of our secular discourse. And the difficulty is that our self-understanding as a church is not binary. We're not the body politic. We're the body of Christ, and we are not a polis composed of factions, right? We are a sacrament united in our love of Jesus Christ. So I think the challenge for the 21st century is, and this is where I hope America can make a contribution, is to think about how is it that we have a conversation in the American church that talks about the church on its own terms, that reflects our actual, you know, self-understanding. So, you know, I think all editorial decision-making in America or elsewhere in the Catholic press begins with the question, what is your ecclesiology? For too many in the American church since the Council, and America has sometimes been guilty of this, the ecclesiology owes too much to secular politics and not enough to theology. And unfortunately, it's the difficulty with that is that we then just mimic the same kinds of divisive tactics and dynamics that we see in our secular politics in the ecclesial dialogue, and that's really problematic.
Now, you mentioned you were here from 2007, 2009. Last 3 years, you were in London studying. That give you a little sense, so give you a little distance on the United States, and you could see this from a distance and see what some of these problems are you just presented.
Yeah, I think it did. I think, you know, one of the things that really struck me about living abroad was I didn't realize how Calvinist a country the United States is, you know, particularly its political culture. I mean, the larger culture is largely Calvinist, But the political culture is peculiarly Calvinist. What I mean by that is that, you know, Calvin took an idea from Augustine, from City of God. You know, Augustine, you know, reminded us in City of God that there are two cities. You know, it's the City of God and the City of Man, and you know, those who, and they're marked by different loves. Those who belong to the City of God love God and God in Christ, and those who belong to the City of Man are concerned only with the here and now and the fleeting and the bodily and the temporal and so forth. And, you know, Augustine understood these two cities as kind of temporal realities, and in our present temporal reality, they interact and intersect with one another. So you don't really know necessarily who belongs to the City of God and who belongs to the City of Man, though the church is the visible sign of the City of God on earth. Why is that important? Because Calvin came along, and he and some of his followers began to understand those two cities in spatial terms. They were spaces. And so those who belonged to the City of God, those who were so quote-unquote holy, couldn't share space with those who were quote-unquote sinners and belonged to the City of Man. And that dynamic, right, has influenced American politics. This is why, this is why Nathaniel Hawthorne set the Scarlet Letter in Massachusetts and not in Milan, right? Because it's the very idea of it being in Milan is ludicrous, right? Because that notion that because someone has offended or is sinful, therefore they cannot be a part of the body politic or the ecclesial body, right? That's a very Calvinist notion. And, you know, that sort of spatial appropriation of the cities heavily influences American politics, and we get ideas like the city on a hill, you know, this kind of Masada-like notion, right, that the American democracy had a providential element in its founding, and that we are a light to the world, and you know, this also takes the form of American exceptionalism, the notion that we kind of uniquely have something to offer the world, you know, in a uniquely powerful way that's almost messianic in its conception. That's not to say that the United States isn't important, that doesn't have unique qualities and attributes, and that it can't bring about good in the world, but it's a paltry substitute for the Messiah. So, but, you know, this kind of Calvinist political culture, which understands, you know, the cities as spaces and is itself separating the wheat from the chaff rather than allowing God to do it, you know, lends itself to this kind of providentialism in our national understanding and false messianisms like the American exceptionalism. And that is something that I didn't really fully realize until I lived abroad.
Now we're looking towards the future, and we've had these conversations. Now I am now new title, digital editor, but having this conversation about what is the future of America, the print product, the digital product. How do you see, I mean, America being on multi-platforms, how can we get our message across? You know, how do we discern what's the best vehicle to get our message across?
Those are really, really great questions. In my mind, we face two challenges, and one we've already sort of talked about, which is what is our editorial direction, and, you know, how do we set a course that is going to help improve the dialogue among Catholic Christians in this country and also provide a model for the larger society on how to conduct a discourse in charity and with balance and with integrity and fairness and so forth. So there's that piece. And then the other piece really is, you know, what does a magazine do in the 21st century? And, you know, we're not alone in asking that question. There is a lot of thought, a lot of people out there tend to think that the challenge is to move from, you know, print to online or to, you know, digital platforms. But, you know, print still has many advantages. And, you know, I think particularly for an organization like ours that has occupies a kind of niche and a market, it's going to be around for a while to come. And in my own mind, the question isn't, you know, how do we move from print to digital? The question is, you know, how do we move from a mindset that's basically print-oriented to a mindset that sees us as our mission is to produce content across multiple platforms, one of which is print? And, you know, the simple answer to your question, though day-to-day it's much more complicated, as you know, is you do well. Through each platform that which works well on that platform, right? So, long-form journalism, photography, and so forth, those are the kinds of things that you want to do in print. If you need to tell a story in the moment, you know, that's going to, you know, obviously lend itself more to a digital format or, some kind of audio or visual presentation. But I think, you know, organizations like ours basically tend to see, have to shift to a position where we see the magazine, as a weekly platform, right? Something that's more curated, that we're a bit more deliberate about in terms of the content, that's a bit more sophisticated, goes a little deeper, that's, you know, long form. And we have digital products, including our website, that are really daily, right? That, you know, are a step closer to the events, right? And the analysis is a bit more raw, and it's a bit more... not as curated, not as developed, but still, you know, respecting certain basic tenets of reporting and commentary. And then, you know, we sort of understand social media, Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn and all the rest, as really hour-by-hour products, platforms. And, that's where we're basically just either creating content or very, very quickly, or driving our users to content that's ours, or drawing their attention to content that is elsewhere that we think is valuable. So these three areas, social networking, our digital platforms, and print, need to be working together, right, to provide comprehensive coverage so that you create a situation in which our users or our readers can access our content when they want it and where they want it and how they want it, so that at any moment they're able to engage with America's content, they can and can join the conversation, whether that's through their phone or whether it's through their laptop or their iPad or their Kindle or their print edition, that they have an opportunity to engage in the conversation wherever they want to, whenever they want to, and that when they do, they will find always a smart Catholic take on faith and culture, a take that's also informed by, you know, basic Christian virtue.
Well, a smart Catholic take on faith and culture, I think that's a good place to end. Many challenges we face, but we're moving into 2013 and beyond. Maybe we'll check back in a few months to see how our progress is going. Father Matt Malone, thank you for joining us.
It was my pleasure.